Cardiologist Dr. Charles E. Mays noted that the age and lifestyle of the singers probably contributed to their heart problems. Jennings was 51, Orbison 52, and Cash 56. Cash entered intensive care listed as stable but critical, but then developed pulmonary problems over the weekend. Journalists were called and asked to prepare Johnny Cash obituaries, while June asked Lou Robin to fly in from L.A. on Christmas Day. Though apparently alert and able to watch television, he had nevertheless suffered a setback. He wasn't discharged from the hospital until January 3rd, when he vowed to waiting journalists that he was going to change his lifestyle by exercising and giving up fatty foods and cigarettes. "It has been a great soul-searching experience for me," he said. "I never want to go through it again." Cash didn't return to work until March 6, 1989, when he began recording a second album with Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, and Waylon Jennings. His first concert since the heart operation came 4 days later at the Embassy Theater in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he continued touring for the rest of the year. In Paris in May, he was admitted to the American Hospital with what was described at the time as a torn ligament, but which was in fact a life-threatening chest condition. He was booked at the Zena Theater, and the doctors told him that whatever it was could have started the chain reaction and that he shouldn't perform, says Lou Robin. They said it could kill him, but he played it anyway, and in fact, he played for longer than he usually did. That's the way he was when someone told him not to do something. Then, after the show, I took him back to the hospital, and he was kept in for 3 days. In August, Cash was forced to cancel 3 dates in Washington and Oregon because of bronchitis and respiratory infections. On November 19th, he entered Cumberland Heights Alcohol and Drug Treatment Center for a 2-week course of relapse prevention therapy. Thankfully, he recognized the warning signs of a potential relapse after the heavy doses of painkillers he had taken following surgery and took precautionary measures. The words Johnny Cash and hospital were popping up together in headlines with worrying frequency. Many of his friends date his serious decline in health not to his heart surgery, but to what initially appeared to be a minor problem. In January 1990, he had an abscessed tooth removed in New York, and instead of healing smoothly, he developed a cyst between his gum and his jaw. Later in the month, he required oral surgery to scrape the cyst from his jawbone. On February 7th, while at the Grand Ole Opry hosting a TNN tribute to country music broadcaster Ralph Emery, he had to stop 2/3 of the way through the taping because of the extreme pain in his jaw. Concert appearances from February 15th to 24th had to be canceled. Despite the lingering pain, Cash appeared at the country radio seminar at the Opryland Hotel on March 1st to take part in the first Highwaymen press conference. The group performed new songs, announced its new album Highwaymen 2, and promoted its first tour, which would begin March 3rd in Houston, Texas, and end March 17th in East Lansing, Michigan. Discussing the four personalities in the group, Kristofferson said, "Willie's the outlaw coyote, Waylon's the riverboat gambler, and John's the father of our country. I'm still trying to get over the image of being their janitor." The Highwaymen, bound together by mutual respect and shared history, also maintained a sharp sense of rivalry expected of four men at the top of their profession sharing the same stage. "I think they enjoyed being with each other," says guitarist Reggie Young, who was the musical director for the tour, "but one of them would always be trying to outdo the other. There were some big egos involved. When the four of them sang parts of the same song, they'd do joke things to throw the others off. For example, Willie would deliberately sing behind the beat so that it would throw Waylon off, and when Waylon came in, he'd come in wrong." Kristofferson, though not that much younger than the others, didn't get into the business until a decade later and always had the most jitters. He never quite got over the fact that the other three were already well established in their careers when he was still cleaning their cigarette stubs out of the studio ashtrays. Willie had written Crazy for Patsy Cline. Waylon had given up his seat on Buddy Holly's Fatal Last Flight to the Big Bopper, and Cash had toured with Elvis. "For me, it was like being up on Mount Rushmore," he says. "It was like these legendary people were up there along with the janitor." Cash played the tour in terrible pain, but he didn't discover until its end that the surgery had weakened his jaw, so much that he had accidentally broken it while eating a steak. He canceled his European tour scheduled to start on March 22nd. The surgery to mend Cash's jaw proved unsuccessful, and he was forced to cancel the rescheduled European tour altogether. The repeated operations and original damage to Cash's jaw altered his appearance. The lower side of his face seemed permanently swollen, and he developed a habit of leaning it into his collar when being photographed. The nerves in his jaw had also been permanently damaged, and he said it left him feeling like a blowtorch was being held to his chin. On March 11, 1991, Cash's mother, Carrie, died at the age of 86, 6 weeks after coming out of a hospital where she was being treated for cancer. It was a bitter blow for Cash, who cried publicly for the first time that anyone could remember. His mother had been the biggest single influence on his life. She had not only encouraged his music and taught him about Christian faith, both through her Bible reading and the example of her life, but she had convinced Cash that his voice was a gift from God. By all accounts, she led an unwaveringly dedicated Christian life, and no one has a bad word for her. Roseanne remembers her as incredibly long-suffering. As far as I know, she was a saint, she says. She was very much like my dad in that she suffered silently. She never said anything. She avoided confrontation at all costs. Marshall Grant recalls that Carrie Cash was a wonderful lady who really knew no wrong and loved her family beyond anything. She was a gracious lady. Carrie remained cheerful and optimistic despite the hardships of her life in Kingsland and Dias, her husband's alcoholism, and Jack's unexpected early death. She stood by Cash throughout his battles with drugs and yet didn't hesitate to wag her finger at him, reminding him of marital vows when he began his affair with June in the 1960s. Fortunately, she lived to see her son survive all the calamities and emerge as one of the best-known Christian laymen in America. Cash, for his part, never forgot the debt he owed his mother. He knew that the best part of himself came from fulfilling the vision she had had back in post-war Dias, when she told him that God's hand was on him and that he had a special task to carry out. So convinced was he of her vision that it kept him going during the darkest days of his life. From the bowels of Nickajack Cave, where he considered suicide, to the bed in intensive care after his double bypass operation, the same thought stayed with him. I can't die yet because God has more things for me to do. Carrie was a constant presence in Cash's career. When he sang gospel songs and hymns, he was singing the songs she had taught him to love. She twice played piano on the Johnny Cash Show and added vocals in the studio. Johnny even wrote the sleeve notes for Silver as a letter to her, remembering the day she told him, God has his hand on you, son. The letter ended, there hasn't been a day passed in the last 30 years that I haven't recalled that scene in the kitchen with you, Mama, and the things you said and how you said it as if you knew. I remember that afterward. I nodded my head and almost said, I know it, Mama, but I didn't. I just started singing. Now, after 25 years in the profession, I think maybe my voice is still suitable at times to be played on the radio. You still like it, don't you, Mama? That's what matters to me.